Inside the Birds is back on 97.5 The Fanatic. It's Jeff Mosher. It's Adam Kaplan. 6 o'clock Monday night. We'll be here all year doing bringing Inside the Birds to the airwaves here on 97.5 The Fanatic. How you doing, Adam, tonight?
I'm good, my friend. Good to be here with you.
Yeah, we got
week two.
Yeah, you're doing good. I'm doing good. It sounds like I don't know if everybody who's listening to the show is going to be doing very well.
We got some information for them on a lot of the stuff of what happened in the game and what might happen this week and also next week. So lots going on with the Eagles.
By the way, I think I'm doing a lot better now because I have the microphone pointed at my mouth correctly. I had it reversed there. Somebody pulled the 180 on me and had the wrong part of the mic. So I don't know how many people heard me very well, but I'm here. We're good. Glad to be here on 97.5 The Fanatic again. We'll be here all year long. All right, we're going to get into a bunch of things. And Adam, one of the things I like about us being on The Fanatic and doing in this show is that we are not going to take the Inside the Birds podcast and regurgitate it here for our 97.5 Fanatic listeners. And we want to give new content, which we will do. And I also want to make this more like a sports talk radio where we're a little bit more opinionated, analytical. And of course, the number to call is 610-632-0975 for anybody that wants to get in on the situation and talk to us. Here's what I'm not going to do tonight. Now, we talk. I kind of know how you feel. I think we're on the same page, but I've had some I've really thought about this for the last 24 hours, and we know that when a team starts off 0-2, that's supposed to be talented. There's going to be panic. It's going to be outrage. It's going to be a lot of blame, and I'm not here. Sometimes we do this, but I'm not here to tell anybody that they're wrong and what they're thinking and who they're blaming or being infuriated. I do believe in the 24-hour rule, and right now, the game would have just ended yesterday, right? So we're got to move past it a little bit as far as emotionally. But I'm not going to talk anybody off the ledge, and I'm not going to tell anybody they're wrong. But I want people to understand some perspective here with Carson Wentz, who he is, and who he's going to be from here on out. And this is something I've been thinking about that I'm curious if you have the same reaction. Now, I'm a big, especially in sports, I'm a big law of averages guy. I'm a big statistical trend guy, right? When I see a player like Carson Wentz, who has built a career on a certain level of consistency. Now, you could say he's inconsistent game to game, but when you look at his stats on Pro Football Reference, you'll see, you know, 62%, 64%, or this many yards per game, or this normal passer rating, right? When you look at Carson Wentz statistics right now, Adam, they are so far below what he normally is as a quarterback that there, I believe you've got to have the right perspective and understanding that it's going to be, I can't imagine this is the Carson Wentz you're going to see this Sunday, the following Sunday, the Sunday after. We talk about regression to the mean. In this case, I'm talking about progression to the mean. He's got issues. He's got some things to work on. He clearly has some stuff that he's had in the past that you and I talk about, right? The mechanics, and we'll go into that today, and the coaching that that's involved. But to think right now that Carson Wentz is no longer a serviceable quarterback, no longer a franchise quarterback, not capable of playing at a level that you expect Carson Wentz to play at, is where I have to say stop. Hold on. Let's look at the bigger picture here.
Yeah, it's gotten a little out of control, which is typically what happens with fandom. They see a game where it was their first home game, the Eagles' first home game. They're expecting their favorite team to win, and they don't win, and they're outraged by it. I get it. I get it. The venom, if you thought it was bad in week one, it was shock that they got down 14-0, 14-3, and it looked really bad. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, if Cooper Kupp doesn't fumble that return, they would have given up maybe 50 points. This defense was so bad, it got so outclassed, and it's like, as someone from another team told me who is doing advance on the Eagles, it was like Sean McVay knew exactly what Jim Schwartz was doing in his meeting, his game planning meeting.
Yeah.
Said, you're going to play cover one like you always do, and you've
got linebackers who aren't very good.
Can't cover very well.
Right.
And you know what's funny you say that about the linebackers? Everybody complains about the linebackers. They're not very good, which is, it's the truth. Why do teams not go after the linebackers like McVay did? They got them so out of position. They were so, had no idea because they're playing man coverage, by the way. Very little zone yesterday, I'm told, by this pro personnel source who's already graded the Eagles game yesterday against the Rams, and he also graded the week one game. It's like, in 2 weeks, by the way, 2 weeks, who are they playing?
The San Francisco 49ers.
By the way,
do the same kind of misdirection, play action, motion on offense.
Who do you think Sean McVay learned this offense from?
Exactly.
Kyle Shanahan.
Studied under Shanahan. That'll be an interesting one, especially if they're able to get Jimmy Garoppolo back. It sounds like today that Garoppolo's high ankle sprain wasn't diagnosed as the most severe, and they think he might be able to play.
Outside chance.
By then, outside chance. Well, they said outside chance this week, so two weeks gives them an even better chance.
This week,
they may have Deebo Samuel back. It's another movable part. So we'll obviously be able to get into that a little bit more. But I think, though, that they, when I look back on the Washington game, Adam, I think that they did try to test the linebackers from a coverage standpoint and a discipline standpoint, but Haskins and that offense just weren't good enough to make it work. In fact, there are three wheel routes that I can remember Gibson running out of the backfield on Duke Riley, but Duke Riley was there. But also, it wasn't thrown in time. They were backed up at the time. You know, Washington doesn't have a really functional offense right now to be able to get cute and say, we're going to attack this area of the field. I think that they're just trying to grow day by day behind Haskins. But you're absolutely right that what the Rams did with a very veteran offense, and Goff, who's been in the league for several years, and Woods and Kupp, and they have, you know, very smart players, they took aim at the linebacker crew. And of course, Higbee getting three touchdowns is a pretty good example of that.
And look, that was in my on our show. Jeff and I do a show, Inside the Birds Television, which you can see on YouTube, on Twitter, and Facebook. We start 3 hours before every Eagles game, no matter what day it is. If they're playing Sunday night, Monday night, or Thursday night, we're going to be doing it 3 hours before. And that was in my, we didn't get to our fantasy segment, but that was the guy. I had Tyler Higbee, number 89, because I know Sean McVay a little bit in terms of how he thinks, and just from talking to people who work with him. He sees matchups, and he usually exploits them. He didn't do such a great job in 18 or 17 against the Eagles, but things have changed. Last year was not a great year for him. He's bounced back in a big way, and you know why? Because he knows who Jared Goff is as a quarterback. Jared Goff is highly programmed. This is the way we need to win with him. We're going to roll him out, give him a clear picture. This is what you do. You throw the ball here. You get it out here. Not a lot of thinking involved.
Right.
It's so simple, a caveman can do it.
I was just about to say that. It's really? So simple,
So seriously, they make it really easy for him, and that's what they did. This is, the belief around the league is, it's not, though they're immensely talented wide receiver and tight end, it's less about them, it's more about scheme and how these skill position players get open. And as you said, and you're right, we need to talk about that more when you talk about the Rams. They've all been here.
Right.
Goff, Josh Reynolds, Robert Woods, Higbee, Kupp. You go through the group.
Not burners, but fantastic route runners.
They do everything well.
They know how to sell their routes.
They just house the Eagles defense. And I will tell you before we move on to our next subject here, because we got a lot to get to. This is probably the worst game the Eagles safeties have had in I don't know how long. I'm told, based on one of the other two people I spoke with, they said the safety play was horrendous.
Well, it's not surprising. Yeah, I mean, McLeod is 30 now, right? And Jalen Mills is just learning how to be a safety. In fact, Jalen Mills was the person responsible for the first touchdown. He's blitzing when he shouldn't blitz, and that forced Gary to rotate over into a spot he wasn't supposed to be
now,
in.
Here's what happened. Because of the confusion that the Rams knew, because the Eagles were not playing zone is easier to play. But it's less high risk, which you would think they would want to play, but they have Darius Slay. They didn't trade for him to play zone. Okay, so they played cover one, and they were playing man-to-man. In cover one, the safety is the only one to play zone. Everybody else plays man. And it just didn't work. And the way they attacked the safeties, they put them in conflict where Mills and McLeod and the linebackers, they didn't know what to do because they got... because McVay got what he wanted, and he exploited it like I've not seen a coach do this to Jim Schwartz. And what have I been saying for a year and a half now about what other teams tell me about the lack of disguise, pre-snap and post-snap?
Right.
That's a problem, and I understand that this is a one-game aberration for them to a degree. They've not played this bad as a defense. Like, the mental errors in the back end.
Yeah, they're usually a good red zone defense. Yeah. They've been a very bad
Terrible.
Red zone. That's the only reason Washington was able to win the game. They were 3 of 4.
Ready for this? Last week in the red zone, they didn't play man. They played zone, and it didn't work.
Oh, man.
So that's where that is.
Doomed to repeat it. All right, let me take you back to Carson for 1 second.
Sure.
I feel like he's doing three things that are hurting the Eagles right now. One, he's throwing interceptions, right? He's had consecutive multiple interception games for the first time since 2016. All right. Two, when he's not throwing interceptions, he's overthrowing and underthrowing receivers. He's putting the ball in terrible places, even when guys are, you know, can make catches. And three, he's not seeing the field. You know, there was that touchdown. He had a sure touchdown to Dallas Goedert in the right corner of the end zone. I want to say in the third corner. And he threw the ball away, which was progress from the week before. But you don't want to throw the ball away when you're not pressured and there is an open guy in the end zone. And that wasn't the only case. But I'm going to make this argument, Adam. If he still had the sailing passes issues and still had the bad mechanics and still wasn't seeing the field well, the Eagles still could have won both games if it wasn't throwing the interceptions. Both interceptions led to Washington touchdowns. They only had 27 points, 50% of their points, right? Short field, they scored. The interception of Arthego Whiteside, well, we can talk also about how bad of a job Arthego Whiteside did on that route.
Needs to run harder.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Needs to have more urgency, I'm told, on that route.
That killed the momentum. They could have taken the lead on that drive.
It's true.
He's got five of their six turnovers, all right? This is the part that if Carson Wentz didn't do, if he was not throwing interceptions, I think he could still have lived with this inaccuracy, the sailing the passes, not seeing the field well. And I think the Eagles can win while he were. If you're asking me right now, what's the number one thing Carson's got to do better? To me, it's not putting the ball in the opponent's hands.
That's big, but they would not have won because their defense couldn't stop. The Rams?
You don't think if they go up by a touchdown
no.
that they're in that game?
Their defense couldn't stop them. No.
It's a fair point.
I just don't think the mental errors, the conflict, I'm told that the scheme that the Rams came in with confused some really smart football players like they've never been confused before. And then there's the linebacker crew, which they were attacked smartly by McVay and Kevin O'Connell, mm-hmm. who's their OC, but Sean calls the plays. And again, like this personnel guy told me, it was like they knew what the Eagles front would be. Because they telegraph what they're doing for every game. 43 wide nine, single high safety.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to more man coverage this season. So far, okay,
sure.
The analytics I'm told is up man coverage. Why? Because you have Darius Slay.
Of course.
Okay, so that's why they're playing man coverage. Now, I'll defend Jim Schwartz in one way. Historically, his defenses get better late in the season. Like, he's sort of, remember when Andy Reid was here, sometimes September and October, not very good, and then he'd rally, everything would change around Thanksgiving. Like, he was great somewhere in November, sometimes around Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
If you study the rankings, at least, Schwartz has a history of the numbers getting better. So, eventually, they're going to figure this out. Nobody should be proud of the game that they had there. Nobody on defense.
All
other
right.
than other than one thing. Their front actually, believe it or not, from coaching tape, played well when Goff was not rolled out.
When they kept him in the pocket.
Yeah, they
Goff
got
was
there.
Terrible in the pocket.
Well, they got it. They got there. The guys that got home, I'm told, were Graham, who had a very good game in terms of upfield.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Sweat, who did start. Barnett did not start. Barnett's not ready, by the way. He was not physically ready.
He played more so than I thought, and he barely made an impact on the game.
He was not ready physically, which is what we told our listeners on our viewers on Inside the Birds Television on Sunday, that we didn't think he was probably ready to play, and he wasn't.
Right.
But overall, their defense got handled, and their defenses, and the other thing is they're not turning the ball. They're not getting turnovers. They've only gotten one, right?
Well, that's part of why I say if they stop turning the ball, I've kind of come to the conclusion that the Eagles are not going to be a very strong takeaway team. They weren't last year. I don't know that they're going to be this year unless Jim changes something and starts getting more
That's
creative.
It.
Right. That's what
if
you're saying.
Unless you confuse someone, forget it.
Right. So you're making matters worse when you're not creating turnovers, but you're giving the ball away. And I want to go back to one quick point on what I was making. It was 21-3 Rams. They were moving the ball easily. The Eagles were doing nothing. And then all of a sudden, it was 21-16 Rams. So the Eagles had scored 13 straight points. And if they go ahead on that drive, right, it then becomes 23-21, and they've scored 20 unanswered points. Now, you could say that the Eagles weren't going to stop them, but I don't know that Sean McVay's game plan isn't adjusted after watching the Eagles score 20 straight points and his offense not being able to counter. That pick that he threw to Arcega-Whiteside was such a momentum buster for the team.
It took everything away, Jeff. Everything away after the cup fumble and they scored.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, okay, you gave to us, now we're going to give it back to you, and we've lost all the momentum, is the way I think the gas came out of the tank for the Eagles. So,
right. Hear me out more on this anomaly.
Sure.
All right, Carson Wentz is a career 63.6% completion rate guy. Right now he's at 59. All right, that is a big drop. He is a career 93.1 passer rating. That's what he has his career. Right now it's 64.4. That's got to be an anomaly. Like, I know people are like, this guy stinks. He's terrible. He's not going to be the guy that we want him to be. It was just last year that he struggled with mechanics at times. He sailed passes at times, but still had a passer rating of 94.1, still won the last four games, still threw no interceptions in December. My point is, we're all like, after two games, I feel like this collective, this Carson's just not the guy. He's not good. But they won games last year with an erratic Carson just cleaning it up from an interception standpoint. You know,
it would help. Yeah, it would help. Decision-making better. And the other term that I want to use is hero ball. He's just forcing throws. The throw to Arcega-Whiteside, and I give Doug Peterson credit. We know Doug is a positive guy. He rarely criticizes, but there's a way that he criticizes, and sometimes you don't know it.
Uh-huh.
He confirmed it was a horrible decision. Week one, Doug was P-I-S-S-E-D. Okay?
Yes, he was.
He was, and he will not call Carson out, but he has a special way of doing it, just like Andy did. Andy had a way of doing it. I remember he did it against Todd Herrmann's, and Todd was up for a contract decades ago, but he has a way of doing it, Doug does, and it's been a little bit different sense from Doug. He has been a little bit more critical, and obviously he's coming with an attitude. He was not happy. His week one Monday press conference, after the loss, going into week two, he was not happy. He was a little bit better today, but depending, of course, what question you brought up, this is not something they were expecting to experience. This 0-2 is not, and by the way, it's not the way that we expected.
Right. All right, so let me
a little different.
To measure this out, right, and in the pantheon of things that you imagine changing over the next 2 or 3 weeks, what would it be? Carson Wentz being a little bit closer to being around 62, 63%, 90, 95% passer rating, or Jim Schwartz becoming a much more creative blitzer, or not even, when I say that,
well,
I'm not asking for Jim Schwartz to be Todd Bowles and blitz 40.
They won't.
You said.
Yeah, they're running a wide nine.
Just be a little bit more creative. Now, which one do you think is more likely to be different?
Well, what Carson, do they need more is Wentz. They've been able to make the playoffs with Schwartz. Now, he played to his secondary before, is the way he was explaining to me.
Right.
That's why he had not been aggressive in previous years. Other than against Luke Falk, you probably could have got a sack against Luke Falk last season.
Luke Falk.
You were number 11.
I was.
I got it. But look, it's got to start with Wentz. He's got to be better.
Right, but don't you think that it's more realistic to think that Carson will put up normal Carson numbers than it is to think that Jim is going to do something really wacky that we haven't seen from Jim in 3 or 4 years?
It's not going to happen. He's just
that's my point. That's how much of an anomaly I think what you're seeing from Carson Wentz is right now, and why I'd almost be more concerned about the future of the defense than the future of the offense. Because I do think Carson,
what you're seeing right now, is
a total outlier. Yeah. I'm not saying he doesn't have issues. He had him last year. He had him the year before.
That's it.
He's got him. But he's been able to maintain a certain level of play.
Right, right.
The defense is something that fluctuates up and down, up and down. But the
Jim rallies, though. Jim rallies.
Jim can rally, too.
You know, as much as we've been negative the last season or so on Schwartz, because it's strictly from our sources, from other teams, really. And he plays a certain way. 43 wide nine. No one else really. There's some teams that will use a wide nine in nickel. Not a lot. Some teams will do a little bit. The Rams have done it with actually Aaron Donald, believe it or not. I think Greg Cosell pointed out on the matchup show. I know the Steelers have done it.
Yeah.
The Raiders have done it with under Paul Gunther. I actually asked Gunther that before. But they never will play it as their main deep front. They just won't. No, teams don't believe in it. But Jim has been so successful, he's just not going to go away from it. Coordinators call a game like they've always called it. And he learned the wide nine from who? Jim Washburn, when they both were in Tennessee.
You're not allowed to say that name.
Yeah, I know. Jeremiah is with the Eagles.
Well, that's not Jim, though.
Yes, that's his son. Yes.
That is the defensive line coach who shall not be named in Philadelphia is Jim Washburn.
My bad.
No, that's okay. We'll let you get away with it. All right, 610-632-0975. So if we acknowledge that both Carson Wentz and Jim Schwartz have a history of kind of getting knocked down, then just when you least expect it, like Schwartz a couple of years ago with that patchwork secondary, all of a sudden they start stopping teams. You look at Sunday and you have to feel a little bit more optimistic. The law of averages itself has to make you feel like the Eagles are probably going to win on Sunday.
Well, you know, it's funny. We three out of four of us on our TV show, it was Trey Thomas was the one who said
pick the Rams.
Pick the Rams, but the three of us, me, you, and Greg Cosell picked the Eagles, and I felt that they'd bounce back. I just thought it was kind of an anomaly, like you were saying. They typically bounce back from terrible losses. Week one was a terrible loss against a bad football team. They're bad. Washington is bad. You know that, and I know that.
I think Arizona showed that too. I mean,
they embarrassed them.
Which I kind of figured was going to happen. I thought, you know, the Washington looked a little bit better than they were when they were able to kind of, you know, go play a team that had their offense together a little bit more, like Arizona really has. And by the way, Kyler Murray is becoming a player.
He's a playmaker.
No doubt about it. All right, we're going to take our first break here on Inside the Birds Radio on 97.5 The Fanatic. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Wentz, the defense, and get into a little bit of a review of some things that went wrong that people might not even realize right here. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher, Inside the Birds Radio on The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, Inside the Birds Radio back here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan. Reminder, if you want to listen to the Inside the Birds podcast, if you're not familiar with us yet, we're available on every podcast platform out there, Apple, Stitcher, Spotify. Inside the Birds is the name. We also have a website, InsideTheBirds.com. Check out some of our coverage that's written instead of spoken.
Good stuff. Yeah, in fact, our Andrew DiCecco writes for us, had some really good stuff this past week. And you had, literally within 10 minutes after the game, you had a 10 observations piece.
That's right.
And people were dug it, man, because you're giving them instantly, you're giving feedback on what you saw.
Yeah.
And we got plenty of feedback on social media, my friend. Man, people... they want everybody fired in this town. It doesn't matter. It's whether it's Brett Brown, okay, whether it was Gabe Kapler, and then the last 2 days, yesterday and today, everybody needs to get fired. All of them: the general manager, the head coach, the quarterback. They want everybody fired. Jim Schwartz, he's in that as well.
I'm glad you brought that up. I've been meaning to tell you something lately about working with you.
All right, bye.
You're out of here. No. 610-632-0975 is the number. Look, I want to illustrate our point a little bit more about Carson, because Doug was asked a lot today about Carson Wentz naturally, and we'll hear from Carson later this week when he does his do you still call them press conferences or Zoom conference? His media gathering via Zoom, yeah. But let's hear what Doug had to say. He was asked specifically if he felt Carson Wentz is regressing. Here's what he had to say.
You know, it's a good question. You know, for us, it's a matter of continuing to work, continuing, you know, I think as coaches and players, we continue to strive to get better every single day. You know, I just don't want Carson to feel like he has to make all the plays every single time. I just want him to just be Carson, you know, and you guys know him, you've been around him, you've heard him, you know, his demeanor is he wants to do everything right. And we've given him control to do that. But we just got to continue to work to get better. And I don't think anybody can totally master the sport. You're constantly learning and getting better. And that's what we got to do and continue to coach that.
There was a lot of mumbo jumbo in there or coach speak, but there's one thing that he said, Adam. I wanted to see if you caught on to it. Mm-hmm. There's one thing that he said that like percolated my radar, because he was kind of testy with the media for the last two, as he, you know, 0-2, you would expect. But there's one thing in that quote he gave that I was like, huh, that's interesting. Anything stick out to you?
With those quotes? Well, no, look, again, he has been, in his own way, critical of Wentz, without saying his name.
Right.
He's not defending him like he used to.
Right.
But well, he's also trying to be supportive in a way, but yeah. He's not totally, you're wrong, you don't know what you're talking about. That's the one difference about this year, which it surprised me a little bit, and I say good for him, because yes, you're still supportive of the guy and your players, but you also don't, we all see it, okay? This town, we're passionate about sports. You know why everybody loves Ron Jaworski? Because he didn't fight back when he got booed.
Mm-hmm.
He took it. The players that take it and coaches that take it in this town are beloved.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that don't admit fault, like Chip Kelly, the ones that don't take responsibility,
right?
Those are the ones we get out of town.
That's true.
That's just, and the ones that continually defend people who shouldn't be defended, that is a problem. So Doug, in his own way, Jeff, has found a way to criticize Wentz or to say, look, that's not good enough in his own way.
Yeah. Now, what really stuck out to me along the lines of what you're saying is that when the reporter asked the question, is Carson Wentz regressing? That's normally a very aggressive word to use about a starting quarterback, a franchise quarterback, and most head coaches are going to say no, no. He didn't say yes, but he said, huh, that's a good question. The fact that Doug even acknowledged that that was a good question to me, when 9 times out of 10 you're going to hear a coach say, no, he's not regressing, it's just that we have to work on this, that, and the other, and we'll get him back. I mean, Doug eventually got to the whole coach speak of we all got to do a better job, but it was very interesting on a day where he's kind of testy, that, and even talked about later in the press conference about how he, you know, answering our questions are exhausting. It was interesting that he actually said, that's a good question. But then
how about that? That was surprising to me. The first 2 weeks of the season has not been his usual effervescent self.
No.
For whatever reason.
Well, I can't imagine, though, when Two-Star would have something to do with that, right? Being his effervescent self. He's never been, first of all, people need to understand this, right? He's never been 0-1. He had won every single season opener since he's been the head coach
in
2016.
Washington in 17, so
right.
All season.
2018 was Atlanta with Nick Foles. And last year was Washington.
Where D-Jax had two.
This was his first season opening loss.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. So they're not used to this. And everyone's going to get tested. It's actually good to see Doug Peterson with a little bit of an edge.
You like that?
I do.
Okay.
And you know what? You should be upset. You should be, I can't even say the adjective that I want to say.
All right.
But look, everybody knows, and he feels your pain. He clearly feels your pain, fans out there. We get it.
All right, I want to get into Arthaga Whiteside because I'm befuddled by him. First,
yeah, what? How did you transfer? How did you go to him all of a sudden?
Because he was all right. I am a firm believer, and I feel like you're not with me on this, and that's fine. I'm a firm believer that if the Eagles score a touchdown on that drive instead of having the ball intercepted, that game is totally different. Now, they may give up a lot of points, but I feel like the offensive rhythm, that they would have scored 20 straight points. I feel like their rhythm would have been a whole lot better. I love that drive up until that point, too. Doug was mixing the run and pass really well, a couple of good throws.
He ran the ball, people.
Oh, yeah,
enough
definitely
ran the ball.
I know. He ran the ball. It was fine, right? So I do believe that was a big part of it. And Arthaga Whiteside can't be blameless in it. He ran a terrible route. He put like a little inside move on the corner, but he didn't really, you know, stem the guy. He didn't really like
make. Talking about on the pick?
On the pick,
Carson,
yeah.
Pick, yeah. Okay, here's what I'm told. That was an over route.
Uh-huh.
You've got to have urgency. The way it's explained to me on Sunday night is that you have to, as a receiver, particularly on that route, you got to get there. First of all, you know what the route is. You know exactly what it is. The quarterback knows and you know what it is. But even it has nothing to do with the fact that Carson should have thrown the football. Yes, we know that. Peterson confirmed it. It was a bad decision. Horrible decision, whatever he said, something like that.
Awesome. Right. Absolutely.
Bad decision. Okay? There's no excusing it.
Right.
But you still run your route, and you have urgency. By
That's
the way,
right.
If he has the urgency,
maybe
the ball might have hit him.
Yeah, or
right.
He can break it out. He could have done
right.
Something better.
Yeah.
It's a bad throw, no doubt about it. We're not absolving Carson.
Right.
But
right.
His lack
right.
of professionalism on that route hurt.
He's got
well.
And you know, the other thing is, more receiver coaches that I talk, the more I understand this. You've got to make yourself a pass target. You've got to command the football. This kid does not command the football yet. He sure as heck did it at Stanford, but he doesn't do it here
and,
just yet.
And that's exactly why I want to get into his role. But first, we'll take a few phone calls. Real quick, Inside the Birds is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up. That's code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Mike in KOP joins us on Inside the Birds Radio on the Fanatic. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, long time no talk, Jeff Mosher.
How you doing, brother?
Good. How are you?
I'm hanging in there.
So you know where I'm going to go right off the bat, but
0-16. You're thinking 0-16. You're thinking
no. I'm thinking this is all Howie Roseman's fault, and it's been the drafts have been pathetic since 17, and so pathetic that we have had to go dig into free agency to cover up the mistakes made in the draft, and now our cap is out of whack, and we don't have any young talent to take over and back up these players. And 3/5 of our offensive line is probably going to have to be replaced within a year or two. And we have no linebacking depth. We still don't have a lot of talent in the defensive backfield. Mm-hmm. And our defensive ends are old and not very good. I mean, there's just hole after hole after hole, and it's all Howie Roseman's fault. And I'm never going to let that go. And it's just until that he's out as GM, this team's never going to win again.
I hear what you're saying, Mike, and I definitely think you brought up some really good points that we'll talk about, and thanks for the call. There are some holes here, and there are things that I feel like Howie didn't do well as we talk about depth, right? We talked last week, Adam, I don't understand why he didn't try to get a Jamon Brown going into that Washington game, because for the last 3 or 4 years, he's had a veteran offensive lineman off the bench that the team has had to rely on, going back to Wisniewski when they won the Super Bowl, and then Big V the years after that. And he went into the year with no backup offensive lineman who's actually played in the NFL, and that was dangerous.
That was dangerous, you're right. And look, we might as well talk about the injuries. We haven't talked about them yet.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac Seumalo is going to be out a while. He's going to go on IR. He has a sprained knee, I believe, but I don't know what ligament's been impacted. But anyway, Doug said it was a knee, and it's going to be a while, and it's You could guess it. It's a sprained knee.
Yeah.
They better hope it's only MCL. I don't know what it is yet, but
right.
They better hope it is. If it's a PCL, that is the PCL, posterior cruciate, is not good. That's way worse than MCL. Well, again, we don't know what it is, but that's not good. So now it's Matt Pryor, we think, because he was the one who came in. We don't know for sure yet against the visiting Bengals on Sunday. We'll learn more later this week. They're just, it's amazing to me. Peters, over 30. He's 30 years old. Lane Johnson, now 30 years old. Jason Kelsey, well into his 30s. Jamon Brown is a guy in his late 20s. He's going to play at some point.
Can he play? Do you think Jamon can go play left guard?
That's a question. Can he play both guards?
Can Nate Herbig play left guard?
Yeah, we'll
that's got to be something.
Yeah, Nate Herbig was not his best game, I'm told. You know, I'm trying to be
funny
about it.
People think he played really well just because Carson wasn't getting hit,
no.
But they just did a better job collectively as a line.
Yes, yes. And it's funny, collectively, they were really bad in week one. Collectively, they were good. They were solid. They, for the most part, did a good job. Peters bounced back. Lane was tremendous.
Yeah.
I don't know how he's doing this.
He gutted that one out.
I was told he was terrific. Kelsey was really, really good. Herbig was not very, very good. And Isaac, before he got hurt, was, I'm told, not very good based on tape study from multiple people who saw the tape so far, so that's not good.
That
line is right now.
Let me also say, Mike made a good point from a Howie Roseman standpoint at linebacker. So they've got no veteran linebackers. They're very mixed with their messages on this. Last year, they went out and got 2 veteran linebackers. They got L.J. Fort pretty early, and then they signed Zach Brown pretty late. And then what happened? That was a threat to the compensatory pick formula. So not as much Zach Brown as it was L.J. Fort. But nonetheless, both of them were gone. I know coaches didn't love that.
Well, Zach Brown was an easy call.
Yeah, he was an easy call.
He got himself out of town.
Yeah, he was not a great locker room presence, nor was he playing
well.
I know. Not surprising with the way Eagles and their linebackers have gone. But L.J. Fort, who then returns a fumble yesterday for a touchdown and had a contract, that just looks terrible right now. But what really, really looks terrible is that just like the offensive line, they kind of go into the year with a very raw linebacking core. And as you just mentioned, the Rams went all over it. I mean, Nate Gary's played in the league fine, but Alex Singleton is a backup and a kid that they drafted in the 3rd round. And this is to Mike's point.
Davion Taylor, yeah.
All right. So there's 2 mottos to drafting, right? One is you don't judge a draft until 3 years down the road. And the second thing is when you make a draft pick as a team, you're not drafting for what that player is now. You're drafting for what he is 3 years down the road, right? You draft a player based on his projection down the road.
Correct. That's exactly the way you do it, because they're not giving the answers to the test until it's taken. It takes 3 years to do it.
Right.
That 17 draft, unfortunately, looks to be awful.
That 17 draft is killer. But I want to even talk about the last 2, because it's not just a one or the other thing. Yes, you have to wait to see if Davion Taylor progresses to the point where they want him to be. But that statement, that mantra that you judge a player on 3 years down the road does not mean that the first 2 years of a draft pick's career are freebies.
Very fair.
Where they don't come on the field and play at all.
That's fair.
Right?
Fair.
I mean, you need to get in. When you have a team that, when you have a defensive tackle making a lot of money, a quarterback making a lot of money, a cornerback making a lot of money, another defensive tackle making a lot of money, you need cheap labor. That's how teams win.
And by the way, that fourth round pick they gave up for Jarnaid Avery, it was sitting on the bench. It was inactive. It's unfortunate.
It was.
He's healthy. He was not on the injury report. That's not good. Casey Tuchel played, but I'm told he wasn't really ready. When I say ready, he just didn't perform well enough when he played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he got his feet wet, though. This will help him. He's another guy that needs a full offseason. He played 22 snaps. He played a little bit more than I expected.
Yeah, I just wanted to address this because I commonly see people, and I see it a lot on social media, saying you can't kill them yet because you've got to see what they are down the road. True. Davion Taylor may very well develop into a really athletic, smart, great linebacker, but like if it took 2 years, what are you doing to win games now? If you're going to have a raw, inexperienced linebacker who needs time to develop, well, then you need a veteran who can step in and help, and they don't have a veteran in that backup core. And honestly, it's not like Duke Riley's been in the league for 5 years and Nate Gary's been in the league for four, or this is his fourth, I believe. That's not enough. And clearly, I think that's going to hurt them going forward.
Yeah, you look at the 17 draft. I mean, it's amazing. Their second round pick's gone. Third, fourth, fifth, and sixth round pick are gone. The only two players who are left are Derek Barnett, who has sort of been up and down.
Been very
hurt. This is a huge year.
Yeah.
The Eagles could move on from him if they get rid of him before free agency starts in March. Not owe him a dime. If he's on the roster, they owe him $10 million for 2021.
Mm.
And Nate Gary, the former safety, who's a linebacker, to say that he didn't play well yesterday, I'm trying to be as kind as I can. This is a family show, as far as I know. So, look.
Not like our podcast.
No.
Once in a while, you drop a bomb.
Yes.
People like that.
I don't know.
All right. Well, 610-632.
That's why we have the dumb button.
Now, how does that happen? How does that?
I think that guy was driving and someone cut him off.
Yeah, probably. He said he was from Delaware, but he might have been on the Schuylkill. You know, you never know.
I've not been in the Schuylkill. Knock on wood for years.
Well, this job has brought me back to the Schuylkill, and
I know, I get it.
Let's just say I really like the job. That's why, you know, I
can deal with the Schuylkill. Yes. That was a good area, though.
632-0975. But I think that's a point that gets lost a lot when evaluating drafts. Yes, you have to wait. You have to be patient. But a guy like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was a second-round pick last year, and he needs to be making some type of contribution that's positive. Maybe he will come into his own next year. I have some doubts, but it doesn't give him a free pass to not be impactful or effective last year or this year. That hurts the team.
It does. Arcega-Whiteside is needed in a big way here. They need a possession receiver in a really big way on the outside, and he is that guy. And he's not commanding the football at all. He needs to do a better job. He needs to make himself a pass target where the quarterback trusts him. This is what quarterbacks tell me over the years. There becomes a point where they go, you know what? If the guy's not getting it done, I'm not going to go to him anymore. We're teetering on that right now.
Right.
They need this guy to be a factor. Now, Jalen Reagor's a rookie. John Hightower had the great training camp. He's still missing in action. We haven't seen him for the first 2 weeks. Well, we did see him in week one, and they wish they didn't throw him the football.
How do you feel about that? How do you feel about him not getting an opportunity to improve upon a rough debut? This is like the Miles Sanders thing from last year when he didn't have a great first few games, and all
this?
Of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. All you need to know, you know how many snaps he played?
It was like four, wasn't it?
Seven.
Oh, seven.
That tells you what they think of him.
Right, I didn't even actually. When I saw that, I was surprised because I don't even remember him being on the field. Yeah.
Statistics tell you, they give you an outline.
Uh-huh.
Hard statistics like snap counts tell you everything. A kid who had a great training camp cannot get on the field week two for a receiver core that's underachieved so far. They're telling you what they think of the player right now. We don't need to say it. They're telling you.
I know, but my point is when you're a young player like that, you have to have a little bit of a rope. Like Miles Sanders last year got put in the doghouse. Sat on the bench for a little bit.
Well, he was a second round pick.
Well, yeah, that's true. Hightower is a fifth, but Hightower had a good camp.
You got to play a second back.
And he dropped a pass. Like, he could have fought a little harder. How do you not give him at least when you see J.J. Arcega-Whiteside out there not doing anything himself, How do you not give a kid who at least had a good camp and has a little bit more, I don't want to say upside because of his speed, the opportunity to get out there and make something happen?
Hightower? Yeah. Well,
I know it's a trust issue.
Deshaun,
I get that.
And Rager are those two guys right now that are going to play a lot. Rager played 85% of the snaps. Deshaun, you kind of knew was going to play a lot. The funny thing is, and I...
They turned him into a possession receiver.
Well, first of all, what in the world happened in the first half?
I don't know.
I mean, now I know Doug said they made adjustment at halftime. You made a really good point on our show, which dropped on Monday morning, Inside the Birds Pod, and you'd said, like, look, for all the bells and whistles they're supposed to be bringing in with this new, this revised offensive staff, where is it? Because they're not doing it. This is what I'm told to that point. So, and one of the guys who graded the Eagles tape said they're not doing very much. They're very vanilla at offense so far.
Right.
So everything that Jeffrey Lurie wanted, he wanted innovation. I haven't seen it so far based on the people I spoke with.
No, certainly not a lot of the, first of all, the most, what I expected to see on the field offensively, I actually saw it. It was just wearing the wrong colors. It was it was the Rams who were doing the play action, the misdirection, and the motion.
I don't like their new jerseys, by the way, the Rams.
Yeah?
I like the old school throwbacks.
You're right. I kind of like the old school stuff. Yeah, the new school is a little like LA-ish, you know what I'm saying? All right, 610-632-0975. Max in Allentown is on 97.5 The Fanatic on Inside the Birds Radio. What's up, Max?
Hey, I love hearing the guy from King of Prussia come on and talk about Howie Roseman, okay?
I mean,
there should be a spot every night right now to just bring to the forefront what Howie Roseman means to this franchise. The word cancer is overused, but he's a cancer.
I like how you say it's overused.
But let me see, you've put it out there. Why do you feel that way?
Because this guy should not have been given the reins for anything regarding player personnel. He's never been a scout. He never worked his way up the ranks. He's a nepotism hire. And the fact that he's making the final...
Wait a minute. Who's he related to?
Yeah.
Who's he related to?
Is that what you said, nepotism?
Yeah. What is your point? Yeah. Like, where does that come from, nepotism? That's not factually true.
Well, Jeffrey Lurie, you know, he had an inside to get with the Eagles.
Joe Banner hired Howie. Keep going.
Yeah, as an intern. And this guy survived all the corporate espionage that went on inside the ranks of the Philadelphia Eagles.
There's been stuff that's happened. Okay.
Max, right. I get your point. Right. Thanks for the call. We'll talk about it. Yeah. I'm not. We're not going to sit here and say Howie Roseman's like the greatest thing ever at GM. He's got flaws. He's got positives. It's funny. When the team loses, you hear these calls. When the team does well, when the team signs, like, gets Slay or Hargrave, Howie's a genius. Howie knows the cap. Mm-hmm. I mean, the bottom line is Howie does some things really well, and he does some things that he doesn't do as well. I think when you judge the GM, though, it can't be after two games, right? Because what happens if the Eagles win the next five or six games, and they're 6-2?
Exactly.
They've been known to rattle off streaky games like wins like that.
Yes, Doug Peterson has a history, like Andy Reid in his prime with the Eagles, of turning things around. And I expect that to happen, but it better start this week.
Yeah.
Because I'm telling you, friend, I've lived here virtually my whole life.
0-3 is not going to be good.
I know Armageddon in this town, when it's not expected, it'll be extremely difficult for the Eagles to function. It'll start permeating that building because everyone is hissed off in NovaCare. Everybody's upset. Yep. They have a right to be. They should be. This is embarrassing.
Well, this
the
is
way
a,
that they're losing is
yeah.
embarrassing.
This is a team that fires coaches after it wins a division title. So you know what's going to happen if the team goes over.
It's a fair point.
Three.
Yep, after the 18th season. That's
all right. I do want to get more into Arthego Whiteside, a little bit from his role when we come back, and then also continue to take calls. So Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher, Inside the Birds Radio, here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
97.5 The Fanatic. Now back to Inside the Birds
with Jeff Mosier and Adam Kaplan.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
All right, Inside the Birds Radio back here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan. Got a full board, want to get some calls, but I want to revisit the J.J. Arcega-Whiteside discussion because I think there's more to this than just a player who's not producing right now, Adam. I wonder, theoretically, what they can do with Arcega-Whiteside, even if he were playing well, given how their offense is functioning. Right now, they're predominantly, just like last year, a two tight end offense. They call that 12 personnel, right? And last year, they were predominantly a two tight end offense because A, they had a lot of injuries at wide receiver, but B, because that was their bread
and
butter.
You have to. Yeah, they have to with those two tight ends. They played more two tight end sets than anyone.
Than anybody. Yep. But the reason why they also brought in Jalen Reagor here is because when you're in a two tight end offense, even if you have dynamic tight ends like Ertz and Goddard, you're a little slower. Obviously, when you're a three wide receiver offense, you're more downfield and more dynamic.
And you need to have at least one guy who could run.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
On the outside.
At least one, helpful if it's two. Arcega-Whiteside, as an X receiver, that left out receiver, right, in 12 personnel, there's only two receivers. So you have Arcega-Whiteside and then Deshaun and then your two tight ends. He's not a field strether either. So even if he's like being a capable wide receiver, the most he can give you is like the slant, the shallow cross, the shallow dig, you know, the Alshon Jeffrey kind of role that he plays, except Alshon's a really good wide receiver who actually can give you downfield presence.
He uses his body and makes himself available for Carson Wentz to throw the football.
Right.
He commands the football. He wins. You don't have to run in the 4.3s or 4.4s to win the National Football League.
Right.
You use leverage. This kid's got to learn to use leverage. He was a soccer player growing up, but as a football player, he sure as heck know how to use leverage at Stanford. He won.
Yeah, but I would say that's college football. Yeah, to say he's going to be as good as Alshon Jeffrey is a stretch.
Well, they listen. They thought, and right now it doesn't look like it's going to happen unless he starts bringing up his level play significantly.
Mm-hmm.
They thought he would be Alshon's replacement. At some point, he's going to have more of a chance if Alshon doesn't come back. They need somebody. They need somebody with size to on the outside to get open and be a available pass target who's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is not that guy right now.
I feel like the offense, the tight ends are great, but the offense was best in 2017, right? And then Carson was coming back from the injury in 2018, so it was sporadic. But when they're three wide receivers, right, when it was Torrey Smith taking the top off of defense and Alshon doing that in a different way by making contested catches and Aguilar giving you that vertical slot presence, which he did well in 17.
Well, Smith did. Smith and Aguilar both did.
Right. They were, could be dynamic.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I don't know that Arcega-Whiteside, even if he's playing better, can even give you that level of contested catch and ability to stretch a defense just by going up and getting the ball. So now what do you do with him? You have Reagor that you can play at the X and Deshaun at the Z with your two tight ends. Or you can move him into the slot and make him a Jordan Matthews-type big physical receiver. But right now, Greg Ward's a better slot receiver than him.
Greg Ward gets open. That's the difference.
And he catches everything.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's funny. You and I were at the Combine together. And we were hanging out with some NFL people. And it's amazing to me, the opinions, the variance of opinions on J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. We had a team in the AFC tell me they had a second-round grade on him. We saw an NFC team tell us that they had a 6th or 7th round grade or a priority free agent. Okay, it was very late.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the Eagles had we're assuming the Eagles had a 2 on him because that's why they took him in the second round.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, he has not looked like even a 5th round pick.
No.
I know it's early in his career, but this is just like last season in a way, though they have more help now because they have more speed. They need him to be the guy that they thought they were getting. Make yourself a pass target for the quarterback because I know the way it works at quarterback.
Uh huh.
If you start not getting open or not dependable, the quarterback will not go to you.
Right.
And that's what we're teetering on right now.
I'm going to say something that's going to make a lot of people cringe, and then I'll go to the phones, right? But I've thought about this, and I think it might happen. I think passing on DK Metcalf to take Arcega-Whiteside and then watching Metcalf go, what, 8 picks later and have this success that he's had is going to be very similar and potentially worse than 17 years ago when they passed on Jason Witten to take L.J. Smith.
Man, you're really going
and then,
back.
Well, is it not somewhat similar? I mean, they passed on Witten. Witten goes about, I want to say, 9 picks later to the Cowboys.
Witten's going to be a Hall of Famer, but...
The reason why I say it's worse, though, is that L.J. Smith actually had some 3 or 4 fairly productive years where you weren't as upset about it. I know some people were always upset about it, but at least L.J. Smith was a productive tight end for 3 or 4 years. Remember, he had the double sports hernia surgery, and that really, really hurt him. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside isn't even somewhat productive yet. So, I mean, that's why it could be even worse if Metcalf continues to have the kind of career that he's having. He doesn't even have to be a Hall of Famer. He could just be a really productive...
He is so far ahead of... He's another player that if you polled 32 teams, you might have been split in the middle there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of after the fact, I really did like him, which I don't believe
some of that
stuff.
You always get that, right? Yeah.
But there's a lot of guys who admit, listen, didn't think he could do this. Thought he was a one-trick pony, could only go deep. You know, he's a big guy. Obviously, he's built like Mr. Olympia.
Mm-hmm. Which isn't always great for a wide receiver,
by the way. No, because you got to be able to bend. But it's worked so far. He's been terrific. He's been far exceeded any expectations. And J.J. Arcega-Whiteside's got to get together. But they've got time here. They're coached better with Aaron Moorhead. I'm sure the Eagles are not happy with the results the receivers have given them the first 2 weeks. It's kind of unsurprising.
Right.
But this defense that they're facing this week in the Bengals has not been competitive the first 2 weeks. If they can't torch them, I don't know if these receivers are going to get it done this season.
No, it's going to be interesting to see how well Bengals linebacker Akeem Davis-Gaither plays, because he's been he was picked after, I believe, Davion Taylor. I have to go back and look. Either closer, he might have gone ahead of Taylor, but after Jalen Hurts. And he's been, I think, a fairly
decent...
he's
a fourth-round pick at Keem Davis-Gaither.
Yeah, so that means
he's
the... He's, I think he's starting for them, right? I believe he's played fairly well. I know the reports out of Cincinnati were that he's done some good things. So it's kind of one of those things where maybe Taylor, because of his traits, becomes a better player down the road. But maybe Gaither is a guy that would be helping them right now when they really need
him. Yeah, he's a sub-package player.
Gaither? Or Taylor?
The kid, Gaither. Yeah, Davis-Gaither is a sub-package player. He played 33% of snaps against the Browns last Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem that the Bengals have is, now they also have injuries. Geno Atkins, one of the best D tackles in the league, hasn't played yet this season with a shoulder injury.
Right.
His backup, Mike Daniels, you might remember him.
Oh, I'm a big fan of Mike Daniels.
Yep.
South Jersey.
Yep.
He's in my hood.
His brother Sean. So anyway, Mike, unfortunately, missed last week's game.
Yep.
And that crushed him. You saw the running backs go off. Nick Chubb was fantastic, and Kareem Hunt finished that game for the Browns. So this is such a great matchup for the Eagles offense. It's almost hard to believe that they can't score 30 points in this game.
Well, yeah, that's true. 610-632-0975. Let's talk to Aaron in Texas. What's going on, Aaron?
Hey, guys. You know what? I wanted to ask you guys, at what point did we start questioning the hiring of Matt Burke, or I guess promoting him to defensive line coach? I was a fan of Phillip Daniels as a defensive line coach, also of Chris Wilson, but this defensive line has looked very, I guess, underwhelming against some pretty average offensive linemen past 2 games.
Yeah, you know, Aaron, that's a good point. Thanks for the call. And on top of that, you're talking about a guy who's never coached the defensive line
before. No, he has not. He's a big, smart guy, technique, though.
Mm-hmm.
I brought it up on a show before, Jeff. I said that he'd never coached defensive line before. I talked to people who work with him. I'll speak very highly of him. My understanding is, had they not promoted him, Corey Unlin would have brought him into Detroit with him.
Oh, okay.
And they made sure that didn't happen by promoting him. They gave him a position. He's a good strategist, but the week one, their D-line didn't show up, and they just didn't get any pressure.
Right.
This week, I know it's almost hard to say this because it seems stupid, but I'm just telling you what the tape said from people I've spoken to. Their line actually pressured Goff. The problem is, when they rolled him out, You had them go. The problem is they could not set their feet and get him, and that was so smart by Sean McVay because he knew what he was getting with a wide nine.
Yeah,
you just know what you're getting. You know at the back end. You know they're playing cover one.
I don't think the issue was pressure from a pocket standpoint, because, like I said, whenever Goff had to make a throw from their pocket, he was hurried and he was the pressure. The problem was, and then this is a coaching point, right? Is that there was a lot of breaking contain.
Yeah, the lack of discipline from the linebackers was a real problem. Again, it's just McVay. It's like McVay knew exactly how to beat them and get them so confused. Nate Gary didn't know where to go. Okay, he struggled because they knew the way you beat the Eagles is you go after their linebackers. Mm-hmm. Why this doesn't happen every week is beyond me. They have the worst group of linebackers in the National Football League. This is not me saying this. This is other teams.
Right.
I'm not making this up. This is a fact.
Right.
And I don't know why they're not beat. I don't know why tight ends are killing them.
So this is another good point, right? Yeah. About how people think in absolutes too much because they hear the team say something and they buy it and then it's entrenched in their mind. Just like with the draft thing. Just because a draft player, a pick, can't be judged for 3 years doesn't mean the first two are freebies, right? So that's the other side of the argument. To your point about the linebackers, just because the Eagles value other positions more, right? Just because linebacker in their 4-3 is not the most important position on the field does not mean it doesn't matter who you put out there, right? Just because they've won games in the past with linebackers that weren't, you know, all pros or Pro Bowl guys doesn't mean you could just throw anyone out there and say, hey, that's the Eagle way. That's right. And eventually that stuff catches up with you.
Well, they didn't get it. Listen, 17, they were paying Bradham. Bradham played very, very well.
Right. And they had a third round
Michael
third
Kendrick
round
was
pick.
Still there. It was a second round pick. So,
right.
But since then, they have
and
not.
Hicks.
Yeah, look, they tried with Zach Brown. It didn't work. LJ Fort, the thing that you had mentioned the first hour. The little Twitter storm you and I had, I said something over your tweet on Sunday, and people like, it's like everyone and their mother came out of the woodwork and chimed in on it.
Wait, hold up. You were attacked on Twitter?
No, but they were getting mad at me. No, they didn't get mad at me. They were getting mad at the Eagles. But my only point was this on that one. Every answer, I understood the reasons I was given why they cut Fort, but how do you cut the best linebacker you had in camp? You could say all you want, he's not that good. Mm-hmm. He's better than anything you had at
the point.
He played really well, actually. Did okay, and they cut him, and what happens? After like 4 weeks, he signs an extension with the Ravens. Like, you couldn't have predicted that, but that just goes to show the lack of development at linebacker with Ken Flagel. Ken Flagel is a very respected linebacker coach. He's been in the league a long time. Doug knows him. That's why he's there.
Mm-hmm.
But man, what has happened the last 3 seasons with their linebacker?
I mean, listen, we know why he wasn't on the field. It's you're right. Ken Flagel loves Nate Gary, but also Howie Roseman wanted as many picks as possible. And having LJ Fort on your team past, 6 weeks was a threat to your comp pick for, to the ability to get. It was the Golden Tate pick, right? They had the extra third rounder because of Foles, right? I believe Golden Tate leaving gave them an extra fourth rounder. Now we'd have to check and see if Driscoll or Kayvon Wallace was the extra pick that they got. And look, maybe they'll turn out to be decent players. But again, when you're thinking about tomorrow, what's helping you win games today? Will it matter that you got the comp pick if your team is off to an 0-8 start and your coach is fired?
And Howie's seeing the tape as well. So they're going to keep seeing this. You're going to see it. Kyle Shanahan will expose those linebackers like you've never seen. Now, we'll see this week what Zach Taylor can do.
Will Kittle be back by then?
So Kittle has a sprained knee. And I was told that he was in a lot of pain. Wasn't like the broken shin bone, whatever he had last year, but he was in a lot of pain. It was highly doubtful he'd play. They're going to give him through Friday. He hasn't practiced since he got hurt. They're more optimistic this week than last week. And in 2 weeks, he'll play against the Eagles. If he doesn't play this week, I'm certain of it.
Mm-hmm.
But he is a unique football player. I mean, $15 million a year is crazy for a tight end, but what he does for the run and pass game is legendary. He's better than Travis Kelce, believe it or not, because he's a better blocker.
Right.
And George
Kittle
is a
complete tight end in the game.
One of the best tight ends in the last 20 years. He's unbelievable.
No, he's fantastic. We don't put
fifth round pick.
It's not like PFF is gospel at all, but it says something that he was their number one overall ranked player at the end of last year out of every single player in the NFL.
From coaching tape, you talk to teams, they're blown away. And you could see why Kyle Shanahan, it's like his own kid.
Yeah.
Guys, so important what they
do. It does everything you would want from a coach. But again, going back to linebacker, the Eagles, some people say, well, this is what the Eagles do. No. Like you said in 2017 and 18, you know, Nigel Bradham was a proven player when they brought him here. He had known Jim's system. He was a fourth round pick. Jordan Hicks was a third round pick. Yeah, they don't spend a lot of money at linebacker, but they have in the past at least put second round picks, third round picks into guys like Michael Kendricks and Hicks. And ever since between Hicks, which was 2015.
Yeah.
And Davion Taylor here in 2020, I don't think they drafted a single linebacker in the first three rounds.
No, it was Davion Taylor again. We're not going to know. Boy, they could certainly use him this season. It tells you he's just not ready yet. And look, next year, not that we're getting a draft right now, but they're going to have to address a lot of positions, way more than I expected. There's some things I missed on my evaluation of this team.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, but I know they don't have Will Parks right now. That's certainly a problem. But the regression in certain ways of this team over 2 weeks is surprising. Now, you could also say it's only been two games, and that's certainly true. We need more information. Well, we're going to have on this show, Inside the Birds Radio here at 97.5 The Fanatic, after 4 weeks, excuse me, four games, we're going to have a quarter mark ranking. We're going to break it down, but I don't like some of the stuff that I'm seeing that got exposed against the Rams.
Right.
That bothers me.
Real quick, because our great producer, Tyler Zuli, who again I forgot to mention at the top of the show, my bad, Tyler, I don't usually treat my fellow Penn State alums like that. So Tyler Zuli does a great job. Put the comp picks that the Eagles had this year up on the board. So they didn't actually have their own third round pick. The one they used on Davion Taylor was the third round comp pick that they got for letting Nick Foles go.
Oh, okay.
So that's right. you got to put an extra set of eyes on that pick. And then the fourth round comp pick, they had two. So I don't know which is the one that they were able to get because of LJ Ford leaving, but one was Jack Driscoll. Okay. You know, he might have a future. The other, they traded to Dallas, and then Dallas took the Wisconsin center.
Be a Daz.
So
right,
pretty interesting right there. 610-632-0975. Let us talk to Andrew in St. Louis. Andrew, you're on Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. So, obviously, we all saw the same game on Sunday, and it just doesn't seem like... Am I the only one who watches this team? It's not just Wentz. It seems like a lot of the guys on defense just haven't gotten better. And a lot of the receivers just haven't gotten better. And the routes that they're running are either, like, there are multiple plays where you can watch the tape and you're like, well, there, some people are getting open, but some people, there's just nothing
they're
going
not,
on.
You're right. We addressed that. Thank you, Andrew.
Player development is something we do talk about a lot on the pod.
Let's go to defense because it's a great point we really need to address here. We can address it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Sweat is absolutely developed.
He's been developed.
A tremendous story for them. He definitely is developed.
I'm not ready to go tremendous. He's been a good contributor.
He's been a terrific find for them, and I never thought he'd make it.
Yeah, fourth round pick.
He was thought to be a one-contract guy because of his knee. So far, so good. He's been a great story for them.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Barnett has not developed well.
Correct.
Okay? He's been very wildly consistent. Okay, T.J. Edwards has developed some because he's starting. Now, I know the next point is, yeah, but he's not
he's
good
an
enough.
Eagles, good Eagles okay? linebacker.
But
right.
He's developed some.
No, I will give them development for that.
When you look at the other guys, Marcus Epps was claimed off waivers. He's developed a little bit. But where are the young developmental players on this roster, Jeff, on defense?
Yeah, the counter to what you're saying is that Sidney never developed.
Nope.
Rasul never developed. I'm trying to think of who else they've
tried. Well, Maddox has.
Yes, Maddox and Goddard are good developmental stories.
He's not played particularly well the first two.
That is fair. And you know who also did not have a very good game yesterday, and you kind of thought that he would because he had really... you know, intimate knowledge of the team he was playing was Nickell Robey-Coleman. Didn't have a great game.
No, you're correct. I'm told that. There's so many players to cover, we haven't gotten him.
I know.
Yeah,
this is a game you thought he would shine. He knows
well,
exactly
he
who
does,
he was going
but
against.
But they did some things that they had not been doing quite to this level on the rollouts. But what happened is they got what they thought they were going to get. And that does speak to game planning by their Eagles defense. It's just not good enough. Against these Shanahan people, like Sean McVay, and then Kyle's coming up. Zach Taylor told me he's more of Gary Kubiak's. Although obviously it's sort of the same tree,
right?
But look, it's been a problem. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and again, you know, Andre Dillard, we can't judge him because he's not out on the field. But it's not like you were hearing great things about him in training camp. And it's not like there wasn't a big question mark hanging around him going into the year before he got hurt. So you would like to also be fair and say he had no offseason. And that's kind of a critical thing for a first-year player going into year two. But I'm sure I can look around the league and find some guys having good second years. Who have,
I know. I don't want to use that as an excuse. Yeah, there's none. The coaching's got to be better. The coaches can't throw their hands up and say they're not good enough. Can't do that. You've got to coach the guys you have, and you got to get the most out of them. Look, I'll give you another example. Not that guy's a great player, but he's gotten a second contract with the Dolphins. Urk Rowe, who Jim Schwartz didn't want. Okay, didn't think he fit. They got rid of him quickly.
Right.
Okay, great. Well, and of course they went against him in the Super Bowl 3 years ago.
But
Urk Rowe, now he's been converted. He moved to safety.
Right.
He's made a name for himself. Sometimes coaches have to think outside the box a little bit. Yeah, he's not quite good enough for you at corner, but he's big. Can he play safety? That's how you find more than meets the eye. That's how you uncover rocks with scouting. You see what else there is before you get rid of a football player.
Yeah, I'm very curious. I want to go, if I get a chance in the next day or two, I want to watch some Panthers tape on the All-22 defense to see what's going on with Rasul Douglas. Because
how about this?
He's playing a lot for them. And again, he has a high PFF rating, but that doesn't really... We don't know what role he's playing, who he's defending, whether they're throwing to his side. You know, he could be like a fourth corner in dime and getting a lot of snaps out of there, and he's not really guarding anybody good.
Their defense is terrible. The Panthers' defense has been awful so far.
And that's another thing. You have to wonder if it continues that he winds up. I don't know if you saw it, but Matt Rhule
said
that Rasul Douglas is the type of guy he loves coaching. And I imagine that anybody in Philadelphia who saw that was either thinking, what are you on, Matt Rhule? Like, what are you watching? But I don't know. Have the Panthers been getting beat deep over the top a lot? I know that they gave up some stuff to Ruggs.
Yeah, what happened this past game is that they had, at the Bucs yesterday, they grabbed a 46-yard touchdown run to Leonard Fournette. And Mike Evans beat them badly. They're changing
schemes. But Mike Evans beat him on a back shoulder type of, he was covered well, right?
But again, they gave up a lot of points. They gave up in the 30s. They were not expected to be good. They're expected to be a 5 or 6 win team.
Right.
And that's what they look, and they just lost Christian McCaffrey. By the way, Nick Bosa tore his ACL. That's been confirmed.
Oh, boy.
MRI confirmed it. So, he's out. The Niners have so many injuries. But let me just warn you people.
Super Bowl, year after curse.
Yeah.
It was in 2005.
It doesn't mean that they won't beat the Eagles in San Francisco. And actually, in Santa Clara, I was at that stadium in 15.
I was there.
14 or 15, whatever year that was.
Is it Levi's?
Yes.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was
very high-tech
Eagles playing
stadium.
Out there is beautiful. But
yeah.
I'll tell you what, the way this Eagles defense is playing, man, and I know Jim Schwartz has a history of getting everyone to get together, to get it right later on, but don't look very good right now.
No, it really doesn't. 610-632-0975. All right, we're going to take a short break, come back. We'll continue to get into some defense because we're just now starting to hit the defense after talking offense from the first hour. We'll get into defense and we'll get into more calls. 610-632-0975. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher, Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
All right, Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher here inside the Birds Radio on 97.5 The Fanatic, taking you up till 8 o'clock until my man Devon Givens takes over. I was listening to him on the ride home from here last Monday, and I thought he had it pretty rough in that the Eagles were terrible and the callers were just like yelling, and Devon always tries to be a good voice of reason and try to process things. So I imagine his shift tonight is not going to be much better with how much venom that
people,
there is. For
the folks are going off the deep end a little bit. Just calm down a little bit. Calm down. They got the Bengals. They cure all ills. If they don't,
isn't that funny?
Put the armor on.
Isn't that funny how thin the line between having your season back and stable a little bit compared to if you lose? If you win, you're 1-2. You're feeling a little bit better. You have to think if you win, it's because certain guys played well. And then you're like, okay, we can go out to San Francisco. They can do that and win that game and get up to 500, right? But if they lose, 0-3 is going to... I don't want to be in this city if the Eagles are 0-3.
No,
for my own protection, I don't want to be in this city if this is 0-3 because it's going to get really, really ugly. But even if they win, Adam, the next two games, right, and get to 2-2, they're still not even 500. Like, the margin of error... When you start off 0-2, sure, you're only one game behind in the standings, but just like from getting a rhythm and getting a pace that you want to be, you're three games away right now from even being just one game over 500.
I know, that's the difference between 1-1 and 0-2. The margin of error is gone.
Right.
There's no tomorrow. You have to win this game.
Yeah.
You're not going 0-3. I know this division is utter hot garbage right now. It's terrible. It's the NFC least. It's earned its moniker, but you can't go 0-3. The history of teams making 0-3 is so minuscule. Now, I know there's an extra team in each conference. I get it.
Oh, I almost forgot about
that.
Yeah,
there is.
I guess you really can't count a team out.
No, you can't, but man, you don't want to be in. You don't want to get in 8-8 or 7-9.
And let's be realistic. I don't think the Eagle fan is hoping that this year is like, you just made it into the playoffs and you lost the, or even if, you lost your first round game because you played a better team. No, this team has. This fan base has Super Bowl expectations, and the moves that were made to bring in guys like Darius Slay and Javon Hargrave were meant to be competitive while they turned the roster over. They
Correct.
Want to be.
That is true. They were not rebuilding.
Right.
It's just that when you see what you've seen so far, you do scratch your head. Like, are you sure you don't want to rebuild? What it is the players that they thought would play better than this are not.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only two games. It's a little bit troubling. They better play well this week on both sides of the football, by the way, not just one. And the other thing is, and I cannot overestimate this enough. They must get turnovers. The Bengals defense is so bad. They're asking Joe Burrow to do way too much.
Mm.
And this is a perfect guy to start picking off. I know he's a smart kid, but this is a good matchup for them to get turnovers.
All right, before we go back to the phone calls, I want to ask you about Jalen Hurts. He got on the field, I believe, three times. He was a decoy every single time, and I believe
playing all, receiver.
Right. Well, he was lined up in the backfield once, wasn't he?
Two of them were
and
definitely
then he motioned out.
Yes.
Yeah. Either way, he was a decoy, and I believe Carson completed all three passes when he was in there. Now, I don't know if you can directly say because he was in there, the defense was completely suckered into it, and that's why Carson completed the passes, but there were positive developments. So, at some point, though, Adam, and this goes back to the discussion about the new coaches that they brought in for ideas, there was a play where Jalen Reagor was kind of motioned into the backfield and then caught a pass in the flat from that, which was good. I thought we were going to see that more.
Yeah.
At some point, don't you think that the Jalen Hurts usage has to be increased even more?
Yes. Well, do they have to? No. I'd like to see him use on gadget plays, which we thought would happen.
Uh-huh.
I want to see reverses. I want to see him line up as a running back. If they believe his shoulder can take it. He was not even on the injury report last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard he's come out with this shoulder injury, this torn labrum. Okay, he's got a small tear, as we know. But
right.
They need to be more innovative. We were expecting this. We were told this. When's it coming, folks?
Oh, I know.
This is a great opportunity this week against an awful defense.
I understood it week one because they didn't have their full offensive line and you had all these communication issues, but I'm glad to see it happen in week two. I'm still very confused about the concept of drafting a backup quarterback in the second round.
So am I.
And because it puts you in the position, whether you're a fan or an analyst, right, to say if you truly are drafting him as a backup quarterback, and I believe that that's what their rationale. You have to hold them to their words.
Yes, because they
said the price of a backup had become exorbitant. They don't want to pay it. They know how important it is, so they drafted use a second round pick. But again, if you don't use him in the position of quarterback for 2 or 3 years, and if Carson doesn't get hurt and he plays much better, then you don't use him. You know what I'm saying? It seems
well. I know you'd said on our pregame show, the Inside the Birds pregame show presented by DraftKings, you had said that. You'd base part of it on what Press Taylor said last year about you could see two quarterbacks on the field at the same time. Now, the question is, do you throw a double pass? Like, what do you do to act like Jalen Hurts is a quarterback? But what we said happened. We said after the draft, 5 minutes after the draft, he won't just be a quarterback. There's zero chance that's happening. And it didn't happen.
Do you think Taysom Hill is worth a second-round pick to the Saints?
Well, here's what Jay Glazer reported.
I know he gives them a lot of great plays.
Yes.
I'm not
He's a specialty player. He's an incredible athlete. But Jay Glazer of Fox reported that he absolutely is the heir apparent to Drew Brees. That's the difference. Jalen Hurts was not drafted to be the heir apparent to Carson Wentz.
People don't believe that, though. And they're going to think that even more going
on. Well, I'll tell you what. I know where you're going. You had to start it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. How much do you want to put the ball in Jalen Hurts' hands as a thrower, knowing what that's going to do in this city?
But you can't.
I know you can't operate that way.
But I understand the mentality because it's been here forever. It's in every town. They want the backup quarterback. I get it.
That is very true. 610-632-0975. Pat in Bluebell is on Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Pat?
Hey, gentlemen. How are you this evening?
Doing great.
After the Super Bowl, I said, trade
Foles and Wentz because I don't think either of them are going to amount to anything after this. And I was, of course, ridiculed. And you know what? Hindsight's 20/20. So what do you do? In my opinion, based on what I've seen in the last 2 years, first off, Wentz, he beat up on teams that basically were at the end of the season last year. They were done. They just basically
waited. Yeah, but he did it with
they
no
beat
help.
The Cowboys. Yeah, that no, was the game. Yeah. I get it with the Giants and Washington, but they beat the Cowboys.
Uh-huh. And they can't cherry-pick every game. I mean, that's what's big in this town. Let's cherry-pick, try to make the guy look bad. Come on.
So what do you have here? You have a team that's clearly old, underperforming, and they can't draft. What would I do? If this is my business, I'd start over. I trade everyone that's old, start anew, and before I did that, I'd find somebody that can pick players. Not pick their nose, because that's exactly what they're doing. They're really messing up big time on their draft, as everyone knows.
Pat, so I think Pat... Doing? Yeah, I disagree,
thanks
Pat.
For the call. I would say this. I mean, Pat might eventually prove to be right, but some of the things he's saying become moot if the Eagles win the next five or six games. And... we've seen the Eagles win four or five games in a row, not just with this team, but in the past.
When Pat's talking about the draft, he's talking about bringing someone in. They have that guy in Andy Weidel, who has won multiple rings
with the Ravens.
With the Ravens.
Right, came up through Joe Douglas.
Yes, so Howie Roseman makes the decisions. He has personnel control. The question is, how much is he listening? I can't answer that question.
Right.
We don't know, but we see the results. They've not been good enough the last 2 years. 18 for the five picks they had have been pretty good.
Okay, good example. I want to bring up what you're saying. Good example about, you know, who has the control. The Eagles taking Jalen Hurts, and I'm not trying to beat this to death, but it flows with what you're saying. In the second round, and talking about the price of a backup quarterback and why it's better to have a cost-controlled one, so you do that in the second round. That is an Eagles philosophy. That is not something the Baltimore Ravens have ever done. It's not something that any other team, as far as I know, has ever done. So... if you want to kind of lean yourself on whose theory that was that more of a Joe Douglas / Andy Weidel thing, even though Joe wasn't here? Is that more of like that mindset, or is it more of a Howie Roseman thing? I would think you would think Howie Roseman, because Howie and Jeffrey both came out and said, this is our philosophy on quarterbacks.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Well, you know, the funny comment about the quarterback factory, which I know there's like a Twitter account.
Funny. Is there now?
it's funny. I did get a good laugh when I saw that. But look, the reality is that they're taking an alternate approach to their backup quarterback. This is the way they explain it to me, is that they're no longer, at least for the near future, going to invest a lot of money in backup quarterback.
Right.
They want to develop their own. Okay, that's admirable. You want to do that? Now, you want to spend a second round pick on it? Okay. But here's the problem with this. Unless he plays and plays well, you're not flipping that for a second, third, or fourth round pick at the trade deadline in year four.
Right.
He's going to have to start games. And you don't want him to start games. That means that either Wentz got benched or he got hurt.
Right.
So it's hard. I understand what they're trying to do. It's just not done. You're right. No one's ever done it before.
Are the Eagles really a quarterback factory?
Well, if you go back to the early 2000s, you could talk about some of the guys they've developed.
Yeah.
Obviously, Donovan, A.J. Feely, by a miracle, was not supposed to play.
Right, but nobody ever counts the misses, I guess, is what I'm saying. Nobody ever counts, like, you know, the fact that Kevin Cobb really didn't perform to a second-round pick level, or that Clayton Thorson was drafted last year in the fifth round, or that Nate Sudfeld is seemingly going the other way
on
the depth chart.
He was being... developed, and then John T. Vlippo and Frank Reich left.
Right.
You know, I know that starting, as we predicted 2 years ago, would happen.
Uh-huh.
Did we not say this was going to happen?
We did. They had a nice little quarterback cocoon there, so do they still have the right now, even with Carson now struggling to say, hey, we're a quarterback factory, let's use a second-round pick on a backup quarterback? It's questionable.
It's a little bit questionable. It's something that's just not done.
There you go. 610-632-0975. Justin in Kearney's Point is on Inside the Birds Radio here on The Fanatic.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's up, Justin?
Oh, not much. Nothing positive, obviously. Mm. I know you guys are tight on time, but one glaring thing I noticed, man, week one, all we do is do five-step, seven-step drop, play action, throw them deep, all game, that's it, no adjustment, which I get to an extent, we've lacked that, and now we have, you know, guys on the outside who can get down the field. But then explain how then in week two, and I understand you have to be quick because of Aaron Donald and all that, but that all falls into getting Wentz outside of the pocket and then using that time to set things up to go deep. I didn't see a pass nor even almost a route deeper than 15 to 20 yards the entire game.
I was told they actually had some.
Thanks for the call, Justin.
But they didn't hit them.
They clearly, every offensive formation has the deep route tree. He's right that Carson, there weren't a lot of shots taken.
Yes, they didn't, but overall they didn't. But Carson missed some,
yes,
as I'm told. You're so right. In the first hour, you talked about how Carson's not seeing the field clearly. That the term is getting a clear picture, which Ron Jaworski and Greg Cosell taught me in my 10 years of watching tape there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you how many times they would see a young quarterback struggling, not seeing the field. Not for some reason, they either stare down the pass target or they'd see guys open. They weren't pulling the trigger.
Right.
And this was never like Carson because he's such an aggressive thrower.
Right.
But he's not seeing it well right now.
For Carson, there's always been the element of him not, I don't want to say not seeing it, but not wanting to throw to that dump off route, right? He always wanted to play.
He did check it down. He did check it down a little bit. I was like, yeah, man, finally. I've been screaming about this.
And he threw the ball away.
Yeah, he did. Look, there. You know what? I'm glad you brought this up. There were some positives. He clearly was better than week one. It's not even close. But if he was a 4 in week one, he was like a 5.5 this past week.
Yeah.
He needs to be consistently in the 7s or 8s out of a 10-point scale for them to win and win big. Because this defense will never be able to carry them. They're not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
We know what they're at linebacker. They have no depth on outside corner, and their safety play's got to be better. They've got some problems on defense, but offensively, I still believe that they're going to get it together. This would be the week to do it. I still believe Rager's going to have a good season, a rookie season. We know what the tight ends can do.
Mm-hmm.
They lost another lineman in Seumalo. They're paper thin now at guard, like about as thin as this paper that I got in my hand. But there's an opportunity offensively to get things done. And by the way, the Niners, are they playing 2 weeks? We mentioned they just lost Nick Bosa for the season with a torn ACL. Richard Sherman's got a calf strain.
Right.
He's out at least for this week. He might be next week because he's on IR. Actually, no, wait a minute. Did they put him on 2, 3, and 4? He can't play in week 4.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah, because he played in week 1. Did he? Yeah, he did.
He played week 1. That's
yeah,
he got
so
hurt,
he's
right?
out in week 4.
Right, because he
so
has
to
miss 3
games. So the Eagles are going to have matchups here. But it starts this week against the Bengals.
You know, I think a little bit about 2003, and for some people who are young, they may not remember that, but you know, the Andy Reid starts off 1-3.
Oh,
Donovan does not play well in those, and he used to have great Septembers, but he did not play well that year. Some people thought he had a thumb injury that they weren't talking about, and what Andy did was he went to that three-headed rushing attack
with Buck,
with Buck, yeah. with Westbrook, and was it Dorsey Levins or was Deuce still on? No, Deuce wasn't there in 2003. Right,
I'll look it up.
Either way, it was a three-headed running back committee that nobody was expecting because, you know, it's Andy Reid. Doesn't like to run the ball. And they would just run, and they ran
it
over.
It worked.
They combined for
really
over 2,000 yards that year.
Look, sometimes, though, if your quarterback is struggling, and this is what I always said about Andy Reid, try something else. Anyone who's listened to our show Inside the Birds, all 300 shows we've done, I don't like running the football at all. I believe in analytics. You throw to win.
Mm-hmm.
You throw to score early,
you
run
to
win.
And then you run away. Yeah.
However, I do believe when your quarterback is highly inaccurate, try something else. And do a great job of designing the run, and you win.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes we don't look at the big picture with this football team. They have the ability to be really special in offense, but we haven't seen it yet. They haven't even tried.
I know. This was supposed to be such a much more polished and refined offense than last year because of the speed element.
Right.
The crazy thing is, and the caller Justin just brought it up, and we talked about it in the first hour, is there were no shots to DeSean Jackson in the first half. And then in the second half, they literally turned him into a possession receiver. He caught like 6 or 7. When's the last time DeSean Jackson, I'm going to get the exact stats on him, right? He caught 6 balls, did he not?
I think he had 7, I think.
7 catches? When's the last time DeSean Jackson had 7 receptions and didn't go over 100 yards?
Right, and as you were talking about earlier, they basically made him a possession receiver.
When's that ever happened?
Yeah, that was weird, but now the argument was it coverage? So we'll address the coverage thing, but you know, going back to 2003,
mm-hmm.
it is interesting the way that they ran the football. Buckhalter at 542 yards, BWB at 613, and Deuce Staley was his last year at 463.
Yeah.
So they had about 1,700 yards between the three of them, and it worked. And it certainly worked. And Donovan had that year 355, and he did start all 16 games. It was an odd thing. That was the first year they called it a three-headed monster.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to work for them. And that's about being resilient, finding another way to win, not just doing one thing. and being pigheaded about it. I get it. People want them to run the ball. You can't complain about the running the ball against the Rams.
No, I thought
really
they mixed
well.
The work. Yeah,
Miles Sanders, I'm told, first four or five runs, he missed cutback lanes where he could have had. He was a little bit.
I thought he was a little
rusty.
Jittery in the first. Yeah.
And then he got real serious, and I don't know if Deuce got in his ear. It all changed. He was tremendous. The second half of the first quarter through the rest of the game is terrific. And it was more decisive. He wasn't dancing. He was really, really, really good.
Yeah, I'm looking at the at DeSean Jackson's career stats here and looking at all the times he's caught six passes, right? 106 yards, 110 yards, 98, 76, 149, 94, 178, 140, 102, 171. It's very rare that you're going to see him catch six passes and only have, what is it that he had, 64 yards.
Yeah, it was weird. Nothing downfield. And it was sideline stuff. He had one crosser. It was weird. Look, Rager, he did catch all four targets, but he double caught one. He's gifted. I want to see him get downfield again. This is the matchup this week. They better do it.
Yeah, no, no doubt about it. You got to get Jalen up against those cornerbacks. Let's go to David in North Philly. What's going on, David? You're on Inside the Birds Radio.
Hey, what's up, Jeff? It's been a long time.
Very long, my friend. How you been?
What's up, Adam?
How are you?
Pretty good. It's really not that complex. In terms of the player development, player acquisition, listen to exactly what they tell you and look how they spend their money. Look how they spend their money on the lines. The offensive line.
And it works for them, though. It does work for them.
No, but I'm saying, but look at the two opposite sides of the coin. Mm-hmm. Brandon Brooks, Kelsey, Lane Johnson, and at one point, Penis. You look at the first round picks that they traded for, signed for, how they got them. On the opposite side of the field, you have Brandon Graham, who is a solid player. And you can't take away the play in the Super Bowl, but he was drafted 14, but Fletcher was drafted, 13, 14, or 15?
I think Fletcher was either 12 or 13, yeah.
2012.
And Barnett is drafted in the same range. Mm-hmm. None of those guys, except for Fletcher, Fletcher has the best chance to be a Hall of Famer, so he would match up with Peters. None of them has the impact that Lane Johnson. If Lane Johnson doesn't play, this team loses. And none of them are a fourth, sixth round pick like Kelsey that plays at a premier level.
So what you're saying is that the Eagles do a better job drafting offensive linemen than defensive linemen. They get
it's not just drafting
or acquiring, I should say.
Yeah,
well, I don't know, but Graham is a real.
Thanks for the call.
The first couple years for Graham were bad.
They were bad.
That's when he was blocking everyone on Twitter.
Yeah.
He blocked me. I didn't even talk to the guy before.
I told him to.
Thank you. You know, I knew I didn't trust you. No, I'm just kidding. No, the fact of the matter is, Brandon Graham is a terrific football player. He's going to the Eagles Hall of Fame. He's a great football player. So unappreciated.
Because he's a two-way. Most rushers these days are speed or bull. Like, they're not.
He's not tall. He's just over 6 foot one. He is the heart and soul of this defense. He's a leader. He's just been a great story of development. And I'll tell you what, it didn't look good after his first 2 years. He was immature, needed to grow up. And something happened. I don't know if it's meeting his future wife, whatever it was. Became a family man. He just turned his career and his life around. And he's been great. But Chris Long was a really good signing. Chris Long had bounced around a little bit. He closed his career with the Eagles. He was a great signing.
All right.
Like that. Do they win that Super Bowl without him?
He was huge. That was the year of the one-year deal, man. Patrick Robinson, Chris Long, Corey Graham. I mean, everybody
everything
who
they
signed
touched,
a one-year deal.
I was flying back.
Smith.
That Saturday night before the Super Bowl, okay, I don't go to the game unless I have to be there. I like watching it at home. So I'm flying back with 10 people on my flight. It's Sean Landetta and Andrew Brandt, our friend we know very well, who works at Villanova and, you know, he used to did contracts for the Packers.
Right.
And I remember Sean made a really fair point to me. He said, everything that could go right went right.
That is true.
And everything Howie touched that season turned to gold. And that was Joe Douglas' first year, by the way, 2017.
I mean, even bringing in Steph Wisniewski on a one-year deal wound up being a savior
worked
for them.
Patrick Robinson, who I thought was so bad.
He was so terrible in camp.
First 2 weeks of camp, and then I don't know what the heck happened. Everything, the Jay Ajayi trade, they're not winning the Super Bowl without that guy.
That's a good point.
And everything that could go right went right. Everything Roseman touched turned to gold that season. It all worked. Wentz was amazing. And then obviously the Nick Foles story.
Yeah.
But they still have made the playoffs three straight years. As much as we've been extremely critical of what's happened, They're still generally coached pretty well, though I think they're struggling a little bit on defense. I know. And that's where they're at.
All right, no doubt about it. That's going to do it for this edition of Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. We'll be back again next Monday. Remember, check out the Inside the Birds podcast. Check out the InsideTheBirds.com. And there was one more thing I wanted to plug.
Our board on Facebook.
Oh, yes, our Facebook community page. The Inside the Birds Facebook page has a lot of great talk, so get in on it when you can. Become a part of the community. We'd love to have you. Keep it here for Devon Givens. See you. Have a good night, everybody.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.